It is Canucks Talk. I'm Jamie Dodd. I'm back after a week off working with Jason Brough on the morning show. I'm back where I belong here on Canucks Talk.
We're glad to have you back.
With my guy, Thomas Trantz.
Josh did a great job.
Canucks insider who also covers the team at The Athletic.
Josh did a great job, but we missed you, man.
Very talented young broadcaster.
Genuinely missed you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to be back. I was only gone for a week, and the Canucks are like, still in first place, all that, still having a great season. A lot happened in the week that I was gone. And we can get into some of that, and of course, what happened over the weekend, because also a lot happened over the weekend. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Get your thoughts, questions in now. Kevin Woodley, our guy from NHL.com and Goal Magazine, will join us at 1 o'clock. Always a pleasure to chat with Woodley. But we got a lot to get into today, so let's get right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, February 26th. We'll start with the headlines, and we'll start on the ice. There's stuff happening off the ice. There's reports out there that we'll get to in the broadsheet section of this, but we'll start on the ice, which is...
Well, I think there's a way to tie it together.
Yeah, we can tie it together,
but hold on. I want to talk about the game first.
All right, okay.
Let me take a shot at tying it together, because I think, big picture,
yes,
there's a funny contrast here, which is that on the ice, as the Canucks... broke a four-game win streak in dramatic fashion.
Losing streak, but yeah.
What did I say?
Win streak.
Goodness. Broke a four-game losing streak.
Yes.
With a dramatic come-from-behind victory over Jeremy Swayman and the Boston Bruins on Saturday night. It was all about JT Miller. 3 points. 12 of 18 in the circle. Mm-hmm. 8 hits. Rick Tocchet saying he willed them to victory after the game. And it felt like just this statement alpha performance from a player who's
having a very good year,
a tremendous year, but especially has been, you know, at a different level even since the All-Star break, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's producing. And I think it was most noticeable because the rest of the team flagged a little bit during that stretch.
Right.
Right. So, but he was still standing out, making things happen, being productive out there in a way that other guys weren't.
Yeah. Well, but also, in terms of the results, just pure results, mm-hmm. right? Because the underlying numbers, all that stuff, whatever. It's all good. It's all been good. Don't get me wrong. But the raw numbers on Miller in terms of the goals scored, the Canucks have outscored their opposition by a massive margin with him on the by 10 goals. 10 goals since they came back from the All-Star break at 5-on-5. Plus 10. With Miller on the ice. That's ludicrous, man. Like, they've actually only been 500 over those 11 games. Where would they be without that? Where would they be without those minutes?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this alpha statement, emphatic performance from Miller, and it's contrasted by what we saw during intermission on Saturday night, which was a report from Elliot Friedman saying that teams are... and we'll get more into this in the broadsheet, but teams are calling about Elias Pettersson, who remains unsigned, and then a wash of reporting and speculation today, which we'll get into in the broadsheet. That contrast, the rise of emotional leader JT Miller with the continued doubt and speculation around Elias Pettersson, to me, it feels like that's one headline.
Yeah, I don't want to tie those together necessarily, because it's not as if they have to come at... It's not as if they can only happen with the other.
No, they don't have to be in opposition.
They don't have to be connected.
No, but I think for the experience of Canucks fans and the conversation, I do think they are.
They are connected for a lot of fans. I think that's 100% correct. But it's not as if JT Miller's performance, what he is or isn't doing, doesn't change how the team is going to approach Elias Pettersson.
We don't need to layer artificially like an adversarial component to it. But, I do think there was this... For me, anyway, watching the game this weekend, that certainly was part of it, in addition to sort of admiring the Canucks' composure and, you know, noticing that. So, backing away from this tied-together point, the game against the Bruins,
mm-hmm.
for 50 minutes, I actually thought it looked like my biggest concern about what this team could look like if things don't go well down the stretch and into the playoffs, which is lots of shots, very few chances.
Mm.
Right? Like feeling like the offense is going to be really hard to come by. That's my that remains. I know it has almost no relationship with their results to this point in the season, but you know, the amount of zone time that this team sometimes generates and a lot of it resulting in outside shots. And, you know, if they're not getting the deflections, if they're not getting the layered screen goals, if they're not getting, you know, some of that messy stuff in the blue paint or scoring off the rush, you know, unscreened wrist shot goals, which this team might have 15 of, you know, I worry a little bit about their ability to generate offense. That's sort of been at 5-on-5. That's sort of been my primary concern. Now, even over this losing streak, it's been more about special teams. It's been more about other stuff.
And see, I actually thought even the first part of this game, it actually reminded me a lot of the Jets and the Avalanche game.
Yeah.
Where it was totally like, these are two really good teams playing a tight, checking, mostly defensive game, not a ton of grade A scoring chances either way. And the funny thing was, you know, as much angst as there was about that four-game losing streak, two of the games, the Jets and the Avalanche game, I came away thinking more highly of the Canucks' playoff chances because they went toe-to-toe with those teams in a really, I thought, in a really impressive way.
I thought they played well in those games, but I didn't come out of it thinking more highly of the team.
Well, let's put it this way. I didn't come out thinking like, oh, they'd be screwed in a series against one of those teams.
No.
Zero, no way.
Absolutely not. But I do think that those teams did kind of show that if you can move the puck really effectively, now, granted, that's one of the hardest things to do, move the puck as a team really effectively. I think they gave us sort of a template of what a team with real steel can, how they can play the Canucks and how it can work. But the Bruins game, like afterwards, it felt like the conversation was the Canucks controlled play all night. They weren't like generating grade A's at will and getting robbed by Swayman.
It was a really tight defensive game.
They were on the outside for 50 minutes, and then all of a sudden they started to get some traffic and you know, scored off a set play, scored off a point shot, and boom. Taking nothing away from a really strong Canucks performance overall, I actually thought for 50 minutes it looked like what my fear is about this team's continued limitations, which is, can they generate enough scoring chances? Like, fundamentally, against these best teams, can they generate enough really high-quality looks from, like, mid-range down low? And then they just really took it over and actually started to get chances and were able to take Swayman's eyes, and Swayman didn't even see the Hronek point blast.
No.
You know? Awesome stuff.
No, and it was, I think it was a really important, as much as, you know, the team is still in first place. We're in a very comfortable position despite the four-game losing streak. You're down 2-0 in the third period against the frickin' Bruins of all teams on Saturday.
Yeah, when you've now played 100 minutes against them this
season
without scoring.
And it's like, that was just a really important period for the team and for the fans, I think, more than anything, to have that incredibly positive moment. You know, right the ship, do it against the Bruins, all of those things, the talking point of, oh, they never show up in big games against good teams, which, again, was another part of what I thought was ridiculous.
I don't like that
talking
point.
It's like, they did show up against the Jets. They did show up against the Avs. They didn't win, but they showed up and they played really well. Anyways, they actually won this one. So a huge deal there for them to snap that four-game losing streak, getting the comeback win in overtime. Brock Besser with two goals, including the OT winner. As you said, JT Miller with 3 points as well. And the one thing that did concern me most about the four-game losing streak, and it came to the forefront after that Seattle game with the scorching commentary from Rick Tocchet, was his concerns about the composure of the team, right? And when things do start to go against them, are they able to arrest that? Are they able to turn it around? So it holds a lot of weight for me that Tocchet was explicitly saying after the game, I was really impressed with the composure. That's the type of composure. That's the type of mentality that I want to see. They have to keep doing it. Obviously, they're going to be tested again and again on that as the season goes on, as you get to the playoffs. But not just to get the win, but also to kind of answer the questions immediately that the coach had raised about your composure, I think was a big deal for the team on Saturday.
Yeah, no question. And sounds like it was a pretty explicit discussion about mindset, that Rick Tocchet hadn't been happy about the way that they'd been maybe sort of unfocused, complaining about calls, right? That some of the breaks that had gone against them had deflated the bench, right? He kept talking post-game. It was a great bench. Really liked the reaction on the bench. you know, that side of it. The idea, and talk, it's talked about a lot, the idea of the way you sort of, your comportment in terms of handling things, how you have to behave if you're going to win in the playoffs. You know, I think he thought that part of their game lacked over the course of the past week. I think that's why he was frustrated in Seattle, despite it being very clear that that was a tired performance from the Canucks. You know, he was.
But
like,
you can be tired and maintain your composure.
We can be tired and we still, like, that's not an excuse for giving up a goal off that offensive zone draw the way we did to make it 4-2 and effectively seal their fate. We didn't play smart, right? I thought that was a clear part, clear point of emphasis. Talked about it. Myers talked about it post game, and a test that the Canucks passed, which is lovely.
Yeah, that's a big one for them. All right, let's move on to the broadsheet portion, which of course, dominating a lot of the Canucks discussion today coming out of the weekend. As you mentioned, Elliot Friedman on Hockey Night in Canada mentioning that teams are calling on Elias Pettersson, asking what's going on. Canucks are saying that they're trying to sign him. That's their goal. Friedman also says, you know, the Canucks don't want to comment because there's too much noise on the situation right now. Now, Friedman had some other things to say about this, also some other reports about what the Canucks might do ahead of the deadline. But I did want to play a clip from our pal Rick Dhaliwal on his show with Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV today, reacting to this report from Friedman, kind of passing along the latest about what he's hearing on Elias Pettersson. Here's Rick Dhaliwal.
It's become a distraction now for the Canucks. That's the only way I can say it. And Donnie, they're willing to talk and throw a lot of money at Pettersson, but they don't have a willing participant to talk contract with. That's the bottom line. And the Canucks have to protect themselves. They can't go through this again next year, folks. They can't. They cannot go through this next year when it will be 10 times worse because he's a UFA. He's an RFA now. Mm. Teams are calling because the future is unknown for Pettersson. Canucks are not getting any indication from Pettersson that he wants to be here long term. There's frustration there. I still have no intel that he wants out. Up till now, I've always thought Pettersson would sign, but I'm not so sure now. Vancouver's got to do their homework here, Donnie, when it comes to a trade. They got to do their homework. I don't see a trade in the next 2 weeks, but if it doesn't get resolved in the summer, obviously if he's not here long term, it could end up gearing that way.
So there's a lot in there, I think, from Rick Dhaliwal.
Yeah, there is a lot in there.
Now, I know this is your favorite conversation point, the what's going on with the Pettersson contract negotiations. Well,
yeah. I mean,
and it's like, I agree. I agree with you in theory that you're right. We're not getting real updates. But that's a big story, too, that there is no movement, that it remains the same the farther we go on into the season.
For sure. It's just, it really does feel like one of those things where it's like, still nothing? Still nothing. Still nothing, but with spice. You know?
Yeah.
That's, I did think the...
Well, and the one of the reasons I wanted to play that, and look, you cannot ignore when Elliot Friedman is bringing it up on Hockey Night in Canada intermissions. It's on the 32 Thoughts podcast. When there's all this reporting around it, you cannot ignore the Elias Pettersson discussion. I just thought it was very striking. And I am curious, and text in 650-650, how many of our listeners that this might mirror, to hear Dhaliwal say, I've always just kind of thought he would sign, and now I'm not so sure. I think that struck me, because we know how plugged in Rick Dhaliwal is in this market.
Well, I also thought the... So, for me, it's more the distraction part that stands out to me. Because Dhaliwal wouldn't be saying that without good reason, without cause. And from my perspective, you know, this comes from the national side, right? There's a lot of national reporting around Pettersson. He's not asked about it every day. One thing I've sort of mentioned is I actually am shocked by how little this appears to have been a distraction from a local media conversation driver over the course of the season. Occasionally it's cropped up. We've discussed it. But most of the time, those rumblings have come from without the city, without the market. It's not local media hounding him on a daily basis, no matter what sort of image fans have of the you know, dastardly Vancouver media pool spinning our mustaches. So for him to note that it's a distraction now, to me, makes me wonder if that's how the team's beginning to feel about the fact that you're about to enter this like all-in phase, you know, with maybe a guy who you don't feel, or at least you worry about being all-in with your group long-term, which isn't to say that that should be a concern for the next 5 months. You know, at the end of the day, if you're going to get, if you're going to win a Stanley Cup, it's going to be very hard to get more value than Pettersson can bring you, given your positioning right now. Here's the other thing that I thought was interesting from headlines on Hockey Night in Canada, right? So Friedman reported there that other teams are calling the Canucks to ask if Pettersson's available.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think the, like, that's obviously the part that captures people's attention. And I also think in part because on the insider translator, like if you plug insider to English on Google Translate, right? Teams are calling about usually means this team's open to move this player.
Right. Yeah.
Teams are calling about guy they clearly want to trade. It's like a classic polite way.
Now, I think Friedman.
But I don't think that's the case.
Well, and I was going to say, because I think on 32 Thoughts, and we might play the clip at some point, just because I do think people need to hear how pregnant the pauses are in Elliot Friedman's discussion on this. Like, Friedman chooses his words carefully time. This is like, oh boy. But he makes the really good point, and this is one of my first reactions as well. Like, yeah, if I was a general manager, I'd call the Canucks, be like, hey, what's going on?
Of course.
Of course you are. Like, if there's a sliver of a percent of a chance that this guy is available, you're going to pick up the phone and make that call.
Well, and we can get into some hypotheticals in a bit, but so usually when we hear teams are calling, I think we are conditioned to know Pavlov style.
Mm-hmm.
Pavlov, the scientist, not the like latest high scoring KHL free agent. That player could move, you know, like that's a player that the team's at least open to talking about. And I think this case is different. I also think the meat of what Friedman actually said was the Canucks are replying to teams that they are trying to sign him, and that's our goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty uncertain place to be.
Well, and part of the follow-up in 32 Thoughts was, there is uncertainty, and we heard that from Rick Dhaliwal. There's uncertainty here, right? And I think it's impossible to look at this fact pattern and conclude anything else. There is obviously a significant degree of uncertainty. Now, that doesn't mean the writing is on the wall for an exit here, right? Because, you know, when people text this in all the time, look, Pettersson said he wants to wait until after the season to make a decision, and it could very much be the case that Pettersson has just not taken the time, sat down and thought, what do I want to do with my future? And that after the season, he'll do that and conclude, I want to sign with the Vancouver Canucks. That is extremely, extremely in play here. But that creates this situation with a ton of uncertainty. And it's that uncertainty that attracts conversation around it, right? Attracts speculation and attracts other teams to call. They're like, hey, if there's uncertainty, we got to try to figure out what's going on here. We got to see if there's anything that we can do to improve our team. If there's again, like if Pettersson is actually ever on the market available, that is I don't want to say completely unique, but like go back, find the last time a player like that moved.
Matthew Tkachuk.
Yeah, Pettersson is center. I think it's a bigger deal, even than Matthew Tkachuk moving.
In both cases, you're talking about a guy who's a one of one,
mm-hmm.
right? A one of one who, you know, in Tkachuk's case was coming off a 100-point season. I mean, you're talking about the best of the best, mid-20s, third contract guy, and there's no one else like them, right? In Tkachuk's case, it was, hey, good luck finding another super consistent 100-point power forward, right? They're mm-hmm. one of one. He's the only one. That is that guy. And Pettersson, likewise, good luck finding another 100-point, 40-goal centerman under the age of 27. There's one of one. It's Petey, and eventually Jack Hughes will join him. But that's it. So, you know, for me, those guys, those two are analogous, and that was huge. Like, that was a huge return. It didn't go well for Calgary, but it was a huge return. I mean, the second-leading scorer was part of the return. The NHL's second-leading scorer was, like, three major pieces, or... Well, you know, I guess there were four major pieces that the Flames acquired in trading Tkachuk. So just to give you an idea, yes, we don't see stuff like this that often.
Yeah.
But when we do,
it's a big deal.
It's usually a guy who's coming off a bridge. just gonna go ahead and say that
Look, that's
you shouldn't go long on second contracts.
It's a big part of the conversation here. It's a very big part of the conversation here.
A bridge has to lead somewhere. It's a problem.
Look, we're going to talk more about Elias Pettersson at some point in this show. But I can confidently predict that because there's lots of texts coming in. There's people texting about different teams, about how things could play out. So we can get into some of those possibilities later on in the show. But we'll...
Can we bring things back to normal, and then we'll run through the whiteboard. I do think it's worth noting that on the 32 Thoughts podcast, bigger picture beyond the Pettersson story, Friedman noted that, you know, he doesn't think the Canucks would be interested in making another huge trade for a rental.
Yep.
Unless it's a guy they think they can re-sign.
And I thought that was very striking. Specifically him framing it like, if they have to give up another package similar to Lindholm, only for a guy they could re-sign.
Yeah.
Very, very different, significantly different than they're not interested in doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, that sounds to me very much on the table still, potentially.
Oh, yeah. No question. And, you know, unless it's a guy they can, unless it's a guy with term, or unless it's a guy they can re-sign. Tanev! Sorry about that.
That's how everyone talks about Chris Tanev. We talk about, like, hypothetical deals where there's only one guy who makes sense, and it's Chris Tanev. Like, you know, if they could just go out and get, like, a veteran, right shot, really reliable defensive defenseman
with long hair, maybe they want to
re-sign. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean Chris Tanev? Yeah. Or somebody, you know, whoever.
Chris T. No. That's too obvious. C. Tanev.
Anyway, so that report I thought was interesting. I know there's some other reports out there, too, about what the Canucks might be looking at the trade deadline. So we can park those for later on in the show. Quickly through the rest of the whiteboard here. Lineup notes. Day off today. Of course, new look forward lines in the Bruins game. And Arshdeep Bains, you know, still a member of the top nine throughout that game. Played legitimate third line minutes on Saturday. I thought that Lindholm, Garland, Bains line was pretty effective for most of the game. So I think Arshdeep Bains' status is going to be really fascinating to monitor here. He's gotten some very effusive praise from the head coach, Rick Tocchet, which is always a really good sign. So, again, we can talk a little bit more about that as the show goes on. But in terms of lineup notes, I think Bains' status is one of the big things really worth monitoring right now. Playoff forecast, the Canucks. Now, I wasn't tracking this when I was off the show because I wasn't doing the whiteboard daily.
They got down to 58%.
Okay, so back up to 73% chance
huge
to win
swing.
The division.
15%
so
that, like, swing across three games.
It's
three
not
results,
just
basically
a cathartic, emotional win for the
huge
Canucks. It's a big one in terms of let's go win the division here.
Honestly, they got the swing with the Oilers dropping two consecutive in regulation. Did you watch the Wild game that they played? Oh, man. That was like a classic bad luck game. It was awesome. And then absolutely laying an egg against a Flames team without Jacob Markstrom. Like, oof, that's tough. That changed the equation from, hey, if the Oilers just play really well, the Canucks could play well and still lose the division, to now the Canucks are going to have to hit a real divot to cough this up. Like, that's how significant those three results were in terms of a swing.
And they're projected now to finish with 109 points. This is, again, per Dom Lucision's model at The Athletic. Now, that's behind Winnipeg at 111, tied with Dallas at 109. For the conference standings, of course, they do still play Winnipeg twice, including the regular season finale. And Vegas and LA all of a sudden neck and neck in these projections, with LA surging, Vegas fading. Of course, Mark Stone out for an indeterminate amount of time now.
Vegas has the 24th best point percentage in the 2024 portion of the calendar.
So now all of a sudden you're looking at
this is also why, like, we talk about them like this inevitable sleeping giant, but it's like, man, we really have not seen it.
Well, I think it was in January at some point you were on the road and I was doing a solo show, and somebody asked, who would you rather face first round, Edmonton, LA, or Vegas? And I said Vegas, because it's like, there's a possibility they're just out of gas and banged up by the time you get to April.
The thing with Vegas is, it's like, they're the team you most and least want to face.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, they're the team that could be the most imposing easily. That's what they are. They're the most volatile team in the entire league. Not just the West, not just the Pacific. In the entire league, the range of outcomes for Vegas down the stretch and going into the playoffs is wider than it is for anybody else. We really have no idea who's even going to be in their lineup or who they are.
And all of a sudden, very much in play for to be in that 1-4 matchup in the Pacific Division. Anything to update on the betting odds?
Just that the line is open in the Penguins game. Canucks are -150 home favorites. That's like a 61% implied probability. Pacific Division odds also match the Lecision odds, -270. That's about a 73%. Implied probability. So Canucks in a very good spot in terms of the Pacific, in a very good spot going into tomorrow's game against the Penguins, and now have that, you know, Big Simeon off their back in terms of
that disastrous four-game losing streak.
Yeah, that brief little run of weirdness in which they dropped a few games in regulation consecutively.
All right, we will take a break. That's your whiteboard for today. Lots more to get into, though. We'll go into the text box. I mean, it's no surprise. Look, the Pettersson story, it's a spicy one right now. People are reacting. We'll read some of your thoughts. Text in anything else on your mind about the Canucks as well. 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll be right back here on Canucks Talk. Sportsnet 650.